Herzlich willkommen zu Mein Element, dem Podcast vom Lützeburger Journal und zusammen arbeite ich mit dem FNR, dem Luxembourg National Research Fund.
If you say, okay, we're going to incentivize young people buying homes, but the rent is still too high, it's not going to work. I really like Metropolis, which is, you know, this silent film by Fritz Lang. And it was one of the things that I watched. I'm like, oh, that's why I study what I study. We have, you know, we meet up with friends or invite people over on Thanksgiving. The funniest thing is trying to find a turkey here.
Hallo zu Mein Element. Mein Name ist Max und heute spreche ich mir über den wohl größten Challenge, den wir heute zu Lützeburg schon. Und das ist dann noch gleichzeitig den Job von unserem Gast. Und ohne lo zu viel für Wäsch zu holen, Lindsay Flynn erklärt also lo, wie hat dann sein Job gang auf einer Dinnerparty vorstellen.
So at a dinner party, it's actually really fun to describe my job because I talk about housing inequality and everybody has stuff to say about housing, right? We all live in it. A lot of people are homeowners. So I basically start by saying I study the politics of housing inequality. Sometimes that gets lots of, oh, that's really interesting. Here's what I think is going on. And sometimes it's silence. and you don't really know, oh, I wonder why there's silence. I also really talk about why I study housing, because I study actually social policy to begin with. That's a little harder to talk about at a dinner party or public policy in general. It seems like people's eyes glaze over just a little bit. So I basically say, like, you know, our behaviors are all determined by what we do and engage with in terms of the policies in the countries that we live in. And so I study sort of that process, the ways that those policies have been created and the ways that they might change or prioritize different behaviors and decisions that we make. So that's what I do. But, you know, dinner party is actually one of the things that I kind of like about living around here is that you don't talk about work right away.
On this episode, we have a kleine comeback. Wenn ihr schon die erste Episode könnt erinnern, da wisst ihr, dass wir ab und zu da mal eine kleine Schnellfragerunde angebaut haben. Und bei diesem Video habe ich mich gefragt, ja, why not? Für was sollen wir das dann zurückbringen? Und dafür die allererste Frage, war das dann dein Lieblingsfarbe?
Blue.
What's your favorite sport?
I don't think I have one.
What's your favorite sports team then?
Oh, I used to like the Michigan State Spartans, which are a basketball, like a college basketball team in Michigan.
What's your favorite American snack?
Cheez-Its.
What's a snack you miss in America or from America?
Other than Cheez-Its? No, really, it's just Cheez-Its. We actually, like, when my husband and I go back to the U.S., we always bring back a box of Cheez-Its. They're quite popular. When my friends come over, they're like, oh, do you have any Cheez-Its? I'm like, yes, in fact, I do have some Cheez-Its. But it's silly because they're like a kind of snack that I assume that you probably can't get the kinds of cheese here or that there's some regulation that kind of cheese isn't allowed here, the fake cheese that goes in Cheez-Its. But yeah, fair snack.
So you haven't found a replacement?
I have not found a replacement.
Who's your favorite celebrity?
Oh, man, I don't even know celebrities. Who, what counts as a celebrity?
People who are known in at least two countries.
People who are known in at least two countries. I don't think I have a favorite celebrity. Maybe the guy in Top Gun who wore those glasses, the aviator. Yeah, that guy. He might be my favorite celebrity only because of Top Gun. Which might be dating myself a little bit.
So it's also your favorite movie, Top Gun?
No, it's definitely not my favorite movie. But I just remember that as I think maybe it was probably like the age I was. It was so popular. Everyone's like, oh, I've got to get these aviator sunglasses. And it might not have even been Tom Cruise who wore them. It might have been the other guy that was in the movie who wore them.
But what is your favorite movie?
My favorite movie is probably... Ooh. That's a good question. You said this is supposed to be quick, and I'm not sure I can come up with a favorite movie quickly. What about...
Or a movie that you like, for example.
Okay, so here's a movie that I like, but maybe it's kind of weird that it would be a favorite movie. I really like Metropolis, which is, you know, this silent film by Fritz Lang. And it was one of the things that I watched. I'm like, oh, that's why I study what I study. But it's just, it's really interesting. It has some of these scenes that really make you think about, like, what people do when they work and what people's jobs do to them. So I just think it's a really provocative film.
If you watch such a dystopian, let's say a dystopian film, what are your feelings about that? Do you think, well, that future can actually happen? Or do you think, okay, that's really over the top, it won't be that bad?
That's a good question. I mean, I think that with any dystopian film, and it's not like I'm any sort of film critic by any stretch of the imagination, it took me a while to even come up with a film, right? But I think that even if something is set in a dystopian future, or, you know, it is not dystopian for some people, right? That people can see themselves in that to some extent. So I think it really depends on the film. Like, do I think aliens are going to come down? No. But I think that the films are designed to get us thinking about what seems strange about that film, but in fact, we already experience in our everyday lives. And so, yeah, I guess I kind of can see some of that coming through.
Going to the housing part then, would you prefer living at the beach or in a city?
I would prefer living at the beach.
Beach or the mountains?
Mountains, for sure.
But why do you prefer the mountains?
I love hiking. Mm-hmm. So it's like you step outside and you can hike. But I think the mountains are like you walk out and you feel this sense of place in a different way. It, you know, puts your life into perspective because they're so vast. So I like that about the mountains. And the air is always cleaner.
if you had to cancel an event at last minute, do you tell the truth or do you tell a white lie?
I tell the truth, which is sometimes kind of embarrassing.
So why do you don't tell the white lie?
Why? I don't know. I guess it probably just doesn't seem worth it, right? It's like if you've got to cancel something at the last minute, you've got a legitimate reason. And if you've got a legitimate reason, give the legitimate reason. Or if it's a personal reason, you're like, I'm really sorry, but I can't do this.
Okay. And the last question, what's your favorite animal?
A hedgehog.
Because of Sonic or because you really like the hedgehogs?
I don't even know that I've actually held a hedgehog, but I think they're cute. They actually have a scarf that has hedgehogs on the scarf. But there was a book I read, and I can't tell you the author, which is too bad. But they gave this analogy about like the sleepy hedgehog and how you wouldn't want to throw like a sleeping hedgehog into someone else's hands. And it was a way of thinking about the ways that what we do affects other people. And that was kind of, I guess, really powerful for me thinking, oh, yeah, like we're all in this ecosystem. And so I've always had a soft spot in my heart for hedgehogs now.
Wir haben in der Intro schon gesagt, und du sind auch schon beim Thema, beim Logement. Die von ihr schon kein Wunder im Gesicht tun, die wissen, da das hier im Land gut ist evident, und auch wenn es Portale, Annoncen oder Kollegen für Kollegen gehen, irgendwie finden einfach nie die richtige Wohnung. Und da das nicht nur, weil ein Picky ist, mit tatsächlich aus der generationsübergreifend aktuell ein Thema. Aber für was ist das so, Lindsay? Oder anschluss gefragt, für was fand ich keine Wohnung?
Yeah, so housing, and you know, this is so tricky because it really, all housing markets are local. And especially in a place like Luxembourg, there's all of these unique aspects. But if you look at a global view for countries that have really tight housing markets, what are some of the big problems? And I think that some of these are really relevant to Luxembourg. One is that the population is growing, and that even though Luxembourg is actually building more housing at a quicker rate than a lot of European countries, it's not keeping up with the housing stock that's needed for either population growth or demographic changes. And so people's household sizes have changed over time. More people are living in one-person households, right? So that changes the way for housing. Another reason is that it's very difficult, and this is the problem everywhere, to make sure that you match the housing stock that you have with the housing stock that is needed. And so you have a really slow moving housing stock. It takes a long time to build houses. Houses are around for 100 or more years, and families and people look so much different and act so much differently now than they did in the past. And so there's always going to be this catch up time as well. But I think, you know, one of the big problems in Luxembourg is that you really have to match your budget to the house prices, and that with increasing costs to buy and increasing rent becomes increasingly difficult for a lot of people.
You already said why we have that situation, but is there a solution where we can be faster than the changes that society goes through? For example, you said that the families look differently now than they did 20 years ago, 50 years ago, 100 years ago. How can we take this distance or this gap between the housing market and reality? How can we close this gap as fast as possible?
Yeah, I think one thing that you can do is make sure that there are as little time as possible between vacancies, right? So the fewer vacant houses there are, the easier it's going to be for people to move in and out. You could think about taking a bigger house and moving it into smaller apartments. And actually you see this happening all over Luxembourg. And so this is a strategy that you had a family home and now it can have three or four families in it. There's downsides to this too, right? A lot of people might prefer bigger housing. It changes the way that the neighborhood is structured. Maybe that house wasn't designed, as great as it could be for the families that need to move in there. And so every possibility that you have, there's also quite a bit of trade-off on whether or not that's going to work. But I always say there's no silver bullet solution in this. So you have to begin thinking about, is the housing stock right for the families? Is it affordable for people? And what can public policies do to address that? So is a policy that increases a rental subsidy, is that going to help or hurt? Is a policy that provides greater incentives for home ownership, is that going to help or is that going to hurt? And of course, all these policies are going to interact with one another. And so it's this constant assessment of what is this policy designed to do? And then what does it actually do once it's been implemented?
Weil in dem Linzeler Häuse Nullerstadt können sich berechtigterweise freuen, hä, du musst doch Politik ergreifen, wird geschittert oder nicht? Und ich kann nicht so in Politik probiert ganz viel und das schon seit Juren und Juren und Juren. Aber irgendwie will es dann einfach nicht klappen. Aber was hat Linze dann als Forscherin im Bereich Logement da von den getroffenen Mesuren aus den letzten 20 Jahren?
I think it really depends, because again, when you look at one policy, you can think, oh, if we were operating in a vacuum and there were no other policies in place, that might work. But how is it going to interact with the other policies? So I think that's really hard to answer. But in general, I think that the big, if you look at like OECD data in the recommendations that they're giving in terms of specifically the Luxembourg market, like part of this is greater densification will help. Part of it is creating a system that enables people to get from the rental market into home ownership. That may help, but it means already you have two of the biggest markets in Luxembourg that you've got to figure out how to work together for one person. Because if rental prices are really high, then it's going to be almost impossible to save for a down payment. So if you say, okay, we're going to incentivize young people buying homes, but the rent is still too high, it's not going to work. So are the policies starting to help? I think in some respect, yes. I think that more people are able to get into housing than before, in part because there are more homes that are on the market, but also there are fewer people who can buy those homes because of the mortgage rates. So that's the other problem, right? You have all of these policies, but then you have things that the government can't really address. The government isn't going to be able to address the inflation rates. The government isn't going to be able to address interest rates. And so it's this awful dance that you've got to figure out what is actually affecting what. And I don't sadly have the answers to them.
Lömel Hand op Herz. Wie von ich weiß ich sicher, mit 30 Jahren ein Haus und ein Auto zu besitzen? Ich muss ich sagen, ich war eh von denen. Und das ist noch gut nicht so lange hier, dass ich gedacht habe, dass das sicher realistisch war. Aber irgendwie hat das auch zuletzt schon mal zum guten Ton gehört. Weil das war komisch aus, weil schon pro Kilometer an der Grenze, und das ist nur egal, wie ein Grenz das sich rauslicht, ist das nicht so. Da sind Leute nicht unbedingt Hausbesitzer, aber die lohnen alle gut. Und dadurch noch mal 30 und teilweise auch mit 40 und nach mir spät haben und ruhen. Aber bei uns Lützebäuer wird eigentlich klar, natürlich käme den, weil immer möglich. Wie kann es da sein, dass der paar Kilometer Unterschied von der einen Grenze zur anderen so einen Mentalitätsunterschied ausmachen?
Yeah, so it's a really interesting question, and there's actually a whole body of research on this and why some countries have homeownership cultures and why others don't. But for the most part, in Europe, Germany is one of the few exceptions that people buy homes later, that it's more likely to be a renting society than a homeownership society. The mentality, at least what we see in the research, is even if, let's say, that people want mentalities to change, and that may not be the case, right? Mm-hmm. It is incredibly difficult to do. So there's one body of research, and I engage in a little bit of this. It looks at young people in particular, and it asks, okay, young people are less likely to be homeowners. Is it because they are less interested, because they can't? And when people interview young people and start asking these questions, you find out that most young people are saying, I want to be a homeowner, but I know I can't be. And it feels like I've done something wrong, right? I haven't reached this milestone that I was supposed to reach, that, you know, other people in my family have reached, that my parents reached 5 or 10 years or 15 years before I did. And so there is a lag right now between what people think they want or what people want and what they're able to actually acquire. And that creates all sorts of problems, right? It can create political problems. It can create problems in terms of you're living in suboptimal housing. But mentalities are something that are just incredibly difficult to change, and they're often driven by policies to begin with. If you have policies over a long period of time that encourage home ownership, people are going to think that's the appropriate tenure type. If you have policies that over a long period of time encourage tenure neutrality or encourage a really high level of social housing so that that's a possibility for a big segment of the population, people are going to feel like that's what's normal, right? Because it's what you see. It's what you look around every day and experience. So when we're in times like we are now, where there's those mismatches, that's when you end up having conversations that bubble their way up into the public discourse, because people have preferences that can't be met.
Okay. And is there a country who does it greatly, who has a housing market where everything works like it should?
No, I don't think so. I wish there was, because people ask me that question a lot. There are, I think, some models that people have held up, but they may or may not work for every country. So one example of a model that's held up is social housing in Vienna. And so now you have the opportunity for more people to acquire social housing. You know, the municipality is very much involved in this. But is it something that would work in Luxembourg, where less than 2% of the housing is social housing? No, probably not. And so you have to look at what is out there in other countries, what sort of is a peer country, what would be politically feasible, because what might be politically feasible under one government would not be politically feasible under another government, and then see what do people want. And so I can talk a little bit about, you know, what happens with any given particular policy. But if that policy isn't palatable or people are not interested in that policy, then it doesn't really matter.
Is housing equal? So does everyone has the same chance to get a house in Luxembourg than the other person?
And so housing is really, really unequal right now. And this isn't a Luxembourg unique thing. It's happening all over the place. So a recent study that I did with a co-author of mine, Caroline DeVield, we looked at people under 45 who were considering young people, because now young is a lot older because all of these milestones are being delayed. And what we found is that fewer young people are becoming homeowners. And so if you compare young people to older generations, then you see potentially a generational inequality. But within the younger cohort, those who are at the higher end of the income distribution, they are acquirements, we looked at about a 7 or 8 year time period, they now have more of the housing wealth than they did 8 years prior. And so you have the generational inequality, but then you also have this inequality across generations where the asset, you know, the wealth that's in your housing is going to people at the upper end of the income distribution more than the lower end of the income distribution.
Du saß in a land that was geprägt wird. Ich für mich kann sagen, dass ich aufgewachsen bin mit Filmen, Helden, Serien an einer Kultur, die ganz ähnlich war zu Menge und darum ob andere Momente gut nicht. Und trotzdem, für mich war immer so ein kleines Highlight, wenn ich mit meinen Lieblingsserienhelden Thanksgiving oder Halloween konnte feiern, ja, sogar mit hin in den Super Bowl konnte gucken. Und das, obwohl mich der Sport null interessiert. Hallo, sind die Fester, die ich eigentlich schon vom Bildschirm kann tun, ob immer heute zu Lützeburg. Ich gucke mit Kollegen den Super Bowl, verklede mich auf Halloween und ja, sogar Thanksgiving bzw. der Black Friday sind fest verankert am Kalender. Für mich ist das cool. Mehr wie es das eigentlich für Lindsay. Ich kann mir vorstellen, dass das gleichzeitig auch ein bisschen weird kann sein, wenn ihr Obermol am kleinen Lützeburg die Fester von der Hemisch feiert. Oder ist das vielleicht sogar ein ganz gutes Mittel gegen Heimweh.
No, I think that it feels a little bit more similar. Sometimes it actually makes you see the differences, because Halloween here doesn't necessarily feel like Halloween in the US. And so then it becomes more visible that you're not in your home country. But for the most part, I think that that does just give you like that moment of, yes, I remember when I dressed up as, I don't know, a clown or a witch and went out trick-or-treating. And so it gives you a chance to talk to people about that, which I think is really cool. But the thing that I think is really tricky in this is maintaining what you know and what you love and still appreciating, you know, what you have in the place that you're in.
And how do you maintain these core memories for yourself? For example, I can imagine that having holidays like, let's say, Thanksgiving, where the whole family comes together and you had this your whole life with the upsides and the downsides of, but it's like a family. And now you're living in Luxembourg and here nobody understands and gets these festivities. How is this for you being here during such an great emotional time?
I think a lot of people do get the festivities, or at least get the, you know what it's like to go to a family event. So is there Thanksgiving here? No. And do, like, I get calendar invites on Thanksgiving. I'm like, oh, no. That's Thanksgiving Day, and no one knows that it's Thanksgiving Day. But what I've tried to do is, at least for the like the festivities that I think are really memorable for me, I try to share that out. So we have, you know, we meet up with friends or invite people over on Thanksgiving. The funniest thing is trying to find a turkey here. And you can actually get turkeys on Thanksgiving, or you order them before. Now, 10 years ago, it was way harder to find turkeys. So Thanksgiving is actually kind of funny because our pots and pans in the U.S. are so much bigger than the pots and pans here. And so, of course, we brought our kitchenware over with us. And then you have like your roasting pan that you'd put your turkey in. And you get a turkey and the pan and the turkey don't fit in the oven here. But that's great, right? Because it creates this new memory that also reminds you of like what Thanksgiving was in the U.S. and what your tiny, tiny turkey is here so that it fits in your oven.
Okay. It's nearly the script of a new movie.
Yeah, maybe. That's a good idea.
What I also wanted to know is, what gives you personally the same excitement as your job?
What gives me personally the same excitement as my job? My favorite thing to do is to go visit new places. Mm-hmm. So outside of work, I really like to travel, and I really like to find new hikes at those places. So that gives me an immense joy to do and have those experiences. But I must admit that a lot of times when I'm hiking, that's the moment when I get a new idea for like a paper that I want to write. And so there's always that little bit of connection between what I like doing outside of work and then what I'm doing at work, and they often intersect.
Speaking of your paper, I think behind me there's one that you exposed here, Current History March. What makes you so proud of this paper?
Yeah, so that paper was an invited paper in a journal that is designed for a broad readership. So the topic is about how the COVID-19 pandemic made it more, made basically the housing crisis worse. But it was one of the first papers that I wrote that wasn't purely for an academic audience. So it doesn't have the same kind of citations. It's a lot shorter. The prose is totally different so that it can be more readable. And it was one of these moments in my career where when I was invited to write this, I'm like, okay, I do stuff that I think is policy relevant and that can help decision making and that is just useful for people to know, because things like inequality, wealth inequality, income inequality, housing inequality, we all experience that in different ways. But that was the first piece that I really had a chance to say, okay, here's how it matters in plain terms, and knew that the audience was there and receptive to reading it, because, you know, it's a journal that people still can order. And so that was, it made me realize that not only do I think that's important, but that I also think it's fun to do, to not always be in the, you know, academic language, but thinking about how to write something in a way that it's really accessible for everybody.
Das war es von Hautmann, mein Element. Vielmals merci und Lindsay. An dir muss lauschen Schuss noch diesen Podcast abonnieren. Da verpasst du gar nicht mehr. Bis dann. Ciao.